Thank you, Sharon. Thank you, PPMD, for inviting me to give an update on where we are with our uterophin modulator program. So I'll talk a little bit about SMTC1100, which is the compound which is in development, and will enter the clinic later on this year. But I want to also give a little bit of an overview of the biology related to utrophin and its role that it plays in muscle. I will then go through some of the non-clinical data that's been generated, and then some of the clinical work. So, forward-looking statement. So muscle design, so it's essentially it's built not to fail. So as you've seen in many of the pictures, muscle is made up of many myofibers, which themselves are kept in groups. So if any of those are broken through exercise, etc., then the muscle itself still is able to perform perfectly well. However, the more of these that get broken or damaged, then eventually the muscle will fail. And what I want to get through on this slide is very relevant to us for utrophin, but it's also for dystrophin. So when you see all the slides of dystrophin staining of sections, whether it be an MDX mouse or a DMD biopsy, dystrophin and also utrophin, they're not just sticking anywhere to the fiber. They're sticking to very specific points on the fiber, which is the costomere. And so essentially, this trampoline is a good example of a section through a muscle fiber. So you have the contractile apparatus, which is in the middle of it, and then all the springs are essentially dystrophin, or in early fetal muscle or regenerating muscle, it's utrophin. And they're linked to a very specific site, which is where the dystrophin protein complex is. So if you then stack all these trampolines together, then that's really what a muscle fiber looks like and is how dystrophin or utrophin is localized. And obviously from the trampoline, the more springs and the greater weight capacity. However, if you take springs away, the trampoline will still function. It's just that you require less and less weight to be applied to it. There comes a point where you eventually remove enough of the springs, then the whole thing's unstable. So essentially contraction and relaxation, stress is transmitted through these anchor sites, and the more anchor sites, then the more functional the fibers are. But also, there's a finite number of sites. So when people say, well, I'm comparing X percent of dystrophin to normal, what you're really doing is saying, I want to try and occupy all these anchor sites to have fully functional muscle. And it's the same for utrophin. Utrophin is trying to do the same thing. So in fetal muscle, where there is no dystrophin, then utrophin is taking up all of these anchor sites to give you these, essentially, the springs. In regenerating muscle, so damaged, healthy muscle, where you need to replace parts of the fiber, again, it's utrophin that's playing this role. So what we're saying is, so utrophin is potentially a functional replacement for dystrophin. So on the diagram here, what we're looking at is, this is development of a fiber. So in fetal muscle, you only find utrophin, and utrophin is localized to all these anchor points. As the fiber matures, what happens is that utrophin transcription, so in the myonuclei, which are along the length of the fiber, they actually turn utrophin transcription off. So essentially the tap is turned off. But they then turn on dystrophin expression, dystrophin transcription, to make the protein, such that in a mature fiber, you now have dystrophin and very little utrophin. But there is a point where both are being expressed along the length of the fiber. So in DMD, when you get your fibers are regenerating, they're all utrophin positive. Over time, as this fiber matures and is now at the point where utrophin is now being switched off, what you now find is that there's no dystrophin to replace it. So this fiber goes back into degeneration. So this is like from the Golden Gate Bridge, you now have fibers which are in this constant degeneration and regeneration, and you now start to get fat and other things filling in the space. So what we've developed SMTC1100 for us, it's been designed to maintain utrophin transcription. So in this scenario here, where in the regenerating fiber or with C1100, Utrophin is maintained the whole time, so the tap is not switched off. So utrophin is present and is able to functionally replace dystrophin, which is lacking in DMD. And this was shown a while ago, work that I did in Kay Davis's lab, where if you deregulate utrophin expression, so now express utrophin on a different regulatory mechanism such that it's never turned off, then essentially in the MDX, you can cure the MDX so that it has no pathology and it has a normal lifespan. And at the bottom here, you can see this, just the similarity in a schematic form between the dystrophin protein and the utrophin protein. So the two proteins functionally as kind of shock absorbers are very similar. So I want to say a little bit about Summit now. So Summit, to all intents and purposes now, is a DMD company developing a franchise in utrophin modulation for DMD. So we have the SMTC1100 compound, which is in clinical development, but we also have a number of other compounds at varying levels behind that, some related to C1100 and some completely new, and this is all in collaboration with Professor Kay Davis and Oxford University. So I'll now say a little bit about C1100 and the development of C1100. So the non-clinical summary, so to say, this is the only disease-modifying treatment in clinical development for potentially for all genetic forms of DMD. And this is a drug that's been developed through screening approaches which is designed to maintain utrophin transcription. So we've shown activity in the target cells, so in DMD myocytes or DMD myotubes. You dose these cells with C1100 and you see increased levels of utrophin RNA and utrophin protein. We've established the proof of concept in the dystrophin deficient animal, and this is using the forced exercise a version of the MDX, which has a worsened phenotype, which has a lot more necrosis and is more DMD-like. But the C1100 itself is an orally bioavailable, so it's a small molecular weight drug, which is appropriate for the pediatric population and is actually formulated for the pediatric population. So it's essentially a flavored aqueous suspension, which is taken orally. And importantly, to date, the compound is completely clean in all the regulatory, preclinical, and safety toxicology studies which have been done. So a brief overview of the key efficacy data. So this is, again, this is in the MDX mouse, a dystrophin-deficient mouse. So dosing once a day with the drug for a number of weeks, we hit the target that we want to do is that we start to see increased levels of utrophin RNA above that seen in the untreated MDX mice. We see increases in utrophin protein as predicted, so not only in skeletal muscle, but also in the diaphragm and potentially importantly in the heart. But if you actually look at sections of these mice, what we're actually seeing is, although there appears to be a total doubling of utrophin protein, what we're really seeing is there's a doubling of the number of fibers which are utrophin positive. So this really is showing that the drug is maintaining utrophin expression in the dystrophin-deficient muscle. So there's a number of points you can look once you start to see the effects of utrophin levels. So changes, beneficial changes in pathology, beneficial changes in excised muscle strength or resistance to contraction. But also what we did was we looked at whole muscle function. So this is actually looking at the mouse and actually doing a whole animal studies. So the one that's shown here is essentially the protection against the loss of grip strength. So the grip strength really is looking at a whole group of muscles in the arms of the mice such that they can maintain a grip. So it's also the fingers, it's the forearm, it's the biceps, all have to be able to be functionally better to be able to maintain grip. So this is, for these, this is the same as a person trying to open a door, pull a door handle, but if there's a strong spring on the door, you have to pull harder. And this test really is saying how hard does the mouse have to be pulled until it actually comes away from a trapeze. And you can then quantify the amount of force that's generated and see how much grip is being maintained. So what we see here is, so this is a normal MDX mouse. This is, so which isn't forced to exercise, so it maintains a similar grip strength to wild type. If you force these mice to exercise, then you significantly worsen the pathology such that they, over 5 weeks, have very little increase in grip strength at all. However, if you take these same forced exercise mice and a proportion of them you've dosed once a day with SMTC1100, you have a profound effect on their ability to grip. So grip strength really is a good kind of surrogate for function of many muscles working together to be able to maintain grip. So I also want to go back over a year now where we ran the first phase one trial for SMTC1100. And this was at a point when the company was very different to what it is today. And it's the groups of people that you see here who came together and actually funded this trial. So this is a good example of what was seen yesterday, of how the community has come together and actually funded a trial which potentially would not have happened over a year ago. So very briefly, the phase one trial, so this completed in 2012. What you can see is that this is a healthy volunteer trial. So these are all adult males. They had repeat doses of the pediatric formulation containing SMTC1100. They had a dose escalation looking at safety and tolerability and plasma levels in the blood, C1100 levels in the blood. And then the volunteers groups then took the drug repeatedly for 10 days and looked to see what effect there was on safety and tolerability, but also what the levels of C1100 in the blood were like. So importantly, SMT11 was safe and well tolerated, and there were no treatment-reported adverse events. We achieved stable plasma concentrations of SMTC1100 after repeat dosing. So after 4 days, we had stable levels over time. And what this graph here is showing is essentially this is an average of the healthy volunteers who took the drug. And over time, from 0 to 12 hours, this is an average. So some of the volunteers had much higher levels, and some of the volunteers had lower levels. What I've shown here is with the dotted line really is what we believe is the blood level of SMTC1100 that's required for activity. So this is whether it's in the animal model or in the cell models. So even though there's variation from individual to individual, even at the lowest plasma levels, we still would expect in these people that utrophin would be modulated for at least 14 hours a day. So based on this data, C1100 is progressing into patient clinical trials. So the clinical development plans. So we're going to move to a phase 1b. So this again is just looking at safety and tolerability, but now in the DMD population. So we'll be looking at ambulatory DMD boys. We'll be mirroring what was done in the healthy volunteers to see if we get a similar exposure of SMTC1100 in the blood. And ideally, we'll be identifying doses for a phase two. Also, what will be going on this year is a number of parallel activities which are required such that we can move to phase two next year. So drug manufacture is ongoing to generate enough drug both for toxicology studies, long-term toxicology studies, but also for the phase two trials, and also a biomarker program to identify potential biomarkers in the phase two which are related to the target, which is changing levels of utrophin. The plans for the phase two are still to be finalized, and we have and subject to review by both FDA and EMA and other clinical experts, but currently the phase two will be a proof of concept trial with sites in the US and Europe. It'll be an ambulatory DMD patient population, potentially 24 weeks of dosing. We'll be looking at pre- and post-muscle and plasma sampling for biomarker quantification, and then there'll be a six-minute walk and secondary muscle function tests, and then the plan is potentially to move to an open label extension. So the biomarker program, as you've seen for dystrophin, one really requires ways of measuring the target. So with the antisense, it's increasing levels of dystrophin. For us with SMTC1100, it should increase the levels of utrophin. Which to us is mechanism related. So that's why we're calling the phase 2 a proof of concept. It proves that if you dose with SMTC1100, you will affect the levels of utrophin. So we're looking to quantify utrophin, but also identify the numbers of utrophin positive cells, fibers. We'll be looking at total utrophin protein and also looking at total utrophin RNA. So this is all quantifiable. We also want to look at muscle health. So the argument would be is if we are maintaining utrophin expression, therefore we should be able to reduce regeneration. So we're trying to develop a set of biomarkers which can look at what we're calling muscle health. So from muscle, it would be looking at muscle regeneration markers. So there's a number of myosin markers which are expressed in very early regenerating fibers. And so the argument would be is if you're maintaining utrophin expression, reducing regeneration, then the percentage number of fibers which have these regeneration markers should decrease with time. We're also looking at inflammatory markers. Again, that's kind of a secondary event from continued degeneration. And then from the plasma, as you've heard, a number of biomarkers are in development. We're interested in further looking at the microRNAs and potentially looking at markers for active fibrosis in plasma. And then we're certainly looking to understand further the work that's going on with the non-invasive markers. So you may have heard of the electrical impedance myography. You certainly have heard of the muscle MRI and also potentially ultrasound. So these, the non-invasive markers, we're talking to people who are working on this. So the biomarker program is really in 2013 is moving kind of the discovery side of it, so assay development, initiation of the collaborations, and then 2014 will be the tech transfer to actual clinical CROs and assay validation. So the next steps, so we're advancing SMTC1100 into the first DMD patient trials for a utrophin modulator drug. It's a phase 1b safety and dose finding study starting later on this year with results early next year. We will aiming to do a phase 2 patient proof of concept study starting in 2014. However, in parallel to the phase 1b, we also need to continue scale up and manufacture of the drug product. So because it's a small molecule with a relatively small number of steps, this is very easy to do, and this is what the pharmaceutical industry has been doing for decades. So we have no issues in scale-up and manufacture. We'll also be doing the long-term regulatory toxicology studies such that we can dose for significant numbers of months. And also the biomarker program to support the proof of concept study, so exploratory endpoints in the phase 2, and already we have a collaboration with Children's National looking at utrophin protein quantification. Also, we're still continuing to develop next generation utrophin modulators, so this is continuing in parallel. We're looking to identify candidates with different pharmacokinetic properties to C1100, also compounds with complementary mechanisms in how they target utrophin transcription and collaboration with Kay Davis and Oxford University. So on that note, I will say thank you. And again, remember to sign up for the patient registries. Thank you.